Thank you, Rita. And just for the record, I now work for the National Healthcare Safety Network and Dan Pollack at the CDC, and he's allowed me to continue doing a lot of the same work I was doing previously, but now with the focus on NHSN. Okay, so this morning I'm talking to you first about what's happening at HL7. This is going to break down into two pieces. The first piece, we're going to kind of review the structure of the HL7 organization itself, how it runs, how it operates, and because that's been changing quite a bit recently. And then we're going to get into some of the more interesting stuff for this crowd is probably the projects at HL7, standards projects for public health. So let's get right into it. Here's a standard organizational picture of HL7. You've got a board of directors, you've got various groups with specific ties between them, and this is more how it really looks, how it really works. You have the HL7 board off on one side, kind of at right angles to the rest of the organization, perhaps. You've got work groups all over the place with arrows running back and forth between various groups, and they're overlapping in various different ways. You've got external organizations that are involved, and you've got work groups off in their own corner doing things, which nobody seems to understand what they're doing. So you got a lot of things going on. And Ted's sitting there shaking his head. Yes, those who know know what's going on here. Okay, so HL7, they have a board of directors, and as most boards, they focus on strategic things, or are supposed to. That's become more apparent with the reorganization of HL7 now, that they're able to focus more, because one of the groups that now reports and has some teeth reporting to the board is the Technical Steering Committee. That's one of the committees that the board oversees, as well as the Executive Committee, Finance, Marketing, Advisory Council. HL7 has a chairman of the board. We have chair-elect and past chair. They're elected director, secretary, treasurer, and relatively new now, we have a CEO and CTO, Chief Executive Officer and Chief Technical Officer, and I should have mentioned COO, Chief Operations Officer. So it has more of a formal business organization now. Oop, went too far. Here we go. Okay, we now have the Technical Steering Committee. It's been around forever. In the past, it was organized as just a group of all the HL7 co-chairs, and turned out in the end just to be a good chance for co-chairs to get together on a Monday night at the working group meeting to have dinner together. That still happens, but it's been reformatted and is now composed of a much smaller group, including a chair, the chief technical officer, representatives from what are called steering divisions, and representative from affiliates, and the architecture review board, and potentially a couple of ad hoc representatives. The TSC is responsible for managing the work groups through the four steering divisions, and I'll get to steering divisions in a moment. It effectively it approves projects. It approves the formation and dissolution of working groups. Yep. Keep hitting that too much. There we go. Okay, steering divisions. These are totally new. These have merged. These came out in the past 2 years. They oversee a set of related work groups at HL7. The co-chairs of the steering divisions are elected from the co-chairs of the steering division itself. There are two co-chairs, both of whom sit on the TSC. Only one of those has an actual vote on the TSC. The steering divisions review projects and make recommendations for action to the TSC. They monitor the status of projects. They review proposals to create, modify, or dissolve work groups. They identify coordination issues between work groups and make recommendations how to resolve those issues. They also identify issues between steering divisions and work with the TSC to resolve those issues, and then they undertake other work that the TSC assigns. The focus of steering divisions, today we have four steering divisions. One's called Foundation and Technologies that provides tools and building blocks for other work groups. The groups in Foundation and Technology deal with things like data types and the reference information model, et cetera. Structure and Semantic Design Steering Division uses the tools provided by Foundation and Technology to develop underlying standards and patterns and common messages that are used all across HL7. There's the Domain Expert Steering Division, which is, in theory, supposed to take the patterns and common messages that are developed by structure and semantic design and apply them to specific domains such as laboratory or public health, whatever it happens to be. Finally, there's Technical and Support Services, which provides direct support to the working groups through such as publishing, tooling, project management, etc. So those are the different steering divisions. And then you get down to the work groups. These used to be called technical committees or special interest groups, but now they're all just called work groups. And work groups are composed of HL7 members or anybody actually who wants to participate. You don't have to be an HL7 member to participate. And in fact, most work groups don't pay any attention to whether you're an HL7 member or not as they operate. What you don't get to do though is vote on official votes, like voting for co-chairs and things like that. But for all practical purposes, it doesn't matter if you're a member or not. The work groups manage projects to develop standards. They meet regularly. They have elected co-chairs who are responsible for operation of the work group and, as I said, previously known as technical committees or special interest groups. Finally, we have projects. Projects are now the way HL7 develop standards. All standards that are being developed have to be associated with a project to be balloted. Projects are sponsored by one or more working groups. Projects have a staff. The one required staff is a project facilitator, a leader for the project. They may have modeling facilitators, vocabulary facilitators, publishing facilitators, subject matter experts. There's all kinds of different roles you can play on a project. Most of these projects are volunteer-driven, or I like to call them voluntolds. Somebody has told them to do it, and they're being paid not by HL7, but somebody else to do it. Okay. Standards development. There's a process for doing it at HL7, and we have a standard for doing that. It's called the HL7 Development Framework, known as the HDF. It describes the steps necessary for a project to develop a standard and describes the artifacts necessary for a standard. And the HDF continues to be developed and is itself being balloted. So, developing a standard, the first thing you need to do is initiate a project. Just like you want to do anything else, you got to get a project. And for any project, you've got to identify stakeholders, identify who's going to actually do the work, the worker bees. You need to identify what work groups at HL7 are going to sponsor the project. Once you have the project, you need to be gathering requirements and then develop content for the standard based on the requirements, and then you ballot the proposed standard. And then after the balloting is over, you update the content of the standard based on ballot outcome, and that may require multiple rounds of balloting. So balloting is the primary mechanism in HL7 for approving standards. It's also the primary quality control mechanism for developing standards. And there are three different levels of balloting at HL7 today. One's informative, and then there is a draft standard for trial use, and finally a normative ballot. In balloting, only HL7 voting members can cast votes on standards, although you, as a non-member, you can pay to participate in a specific ballot. I think they've structured the payments such that it's the same as getting an individual membership, so. There are still those who do it, though.
A limited number can be purchased by any one organization, so one organization can't buy a million votes.
Yeah. So anyway, but the key thing here is that anyone can comment on a ballot as long as you find a voting member who will take your comments and submit them for you. And work groups reconcile ballot comments to resolve the issues. And so during ballot reconciliation, that can be a very intense process, depending upon the level of balloting that's occurring. For normative ballots, they undergo the most rigorous reconciliation. And so all the comments in a normative ballot have to be successfully reconciled, and all the negatives have to be, you have to convince the voter to withdraw them. So basically, you got to deal with them one way or another. Often reballoting is required if substantive changes will require reballoting of the standard. Informative and DSTU ballots have a lower hurdle. Work groups are not required to resolve issues, but usually try to do so. Reballoting is not required even if substantive changes are made after the ballot. So, next we're going to talk about one of the biggest projects HL7 has underway right now. It's called SAFE. Services Aware Enterprise Architecture Framework, and the overall aim of this project is to redefine how HL7 will develop standards in the future. And so from that perspective, it is going to change everything about HL7. SAFE is applying the principles of service-oriented enterprise architecture to the HL7 standards development process. And SAFE will be defining artifacts needed for a standard, processes to use to develop standards, and governance of standards development. As such, it's going to have a direct impact on the HL7 development framework, and the exact impact is yet to be seen. So, SAFE is being developed by the Architecture Review Board, which is a group that is associated with the TSC and the HL7 board. We're still trying to iron out who actually owns that particular group. It's a little ambiguous. But the SAFE will ultimately require re-engineering the structure of the work group, beginning with a SAFE rollout sponsored by the TSC. It's looking for alpha projects to pilot SAFE currently. That means those alpha projects are intended to help figure out what SAFE is actually going to look like in the future. So right now, SAFE is defined, as I said earlier, using a services approach. That does not mean that HL7 is abandoning doing messaging and documents. They're just using a services paradigm for developing standards. Those standards will still be messages, documents, or services. So it's not going to get rid of messaging. A lot of people seem to interpret SAFE as saying we're only going to do services in the future. That's not true at all. HL7 will continue doing those standards that people want, whether they're services, documents, or messages, or something else like Arden syntax, which is none of those. SAFE alpha projects are intended to help flesh out exactly how SAFE should be applied to various kinds of standards. So they're looking to nail down all those projects by the next working group meeting, which is at the end of this month. Now we're getting on to the other half of this presentation, which is about the projects at HL7 that are of interest to public health. In particular, first of all, I'm talking about the projects that the FHIR Public Health Emergency Response Work Group at HL7, which Rita here is a co-chair of, the projects that work group has on its plate. The first one, first set here have to do with domain analysis models. Domain analysis models document the requirements for a particular information domain. So we have a public health reporting domain analysis model that FHIR is a co-sponsor on with patient safety. And the next one is an immunization domain analysis model. Then there's a U.S. Vitals record domain analysis model, and I think we're probably done with that one. Okay. And
no, the TV one.
The TB one, the next one is the one that we're done with. So that one's done, although there will probably be other iterations of these down the road. Now, the goal of domain analysis models is not just to sit out there and be nice little models. The ultimate goal is to take those as a set of requirements for developing things like document services or messages-based standards on those. Other projects for a work group, they have a number of HL7 version 3 messaging projects, including the immunization messaging domain, release 1 and 2, public health investigation requests, phase 1, public health case management, public health case notification, public health outbreak management, and public health related common model element types, otherwise known as CMETs. Other projects include a structured document project for clinical document architecture release 3. FHIR is a co-sponsor of that, and that's actually going to be, I'm going to go into much more detail about that in my next presentation. I'll just say that public health documents are in scope for that project. There's a EHR and SOA have, those are two other work groups, have projects of vital records functional profile that FHIR is co-sponsoring, I believe, and the HSOA RA V2.0/EHR-SDRM project. And I could rattle that off, but I can't actually tell you what that is about.
Keep moving.
Yes. Other projects, FHIR has a number of implementation guides in progress. There's the Electronic Laboratory Reporting 251 implementation guide for the U.S. realm. There's the National Healthcare Safety Network e-surveillance IG project, which I hope to hear has been approved by the TSC today, or yesterday, I hope. I haven't seen that yet, but it's supposed to be. The version 251 IG for immunization messaging is going to be balloted in the spring, I believe. And there's a implementation guide for CDA release 2 for public health case reporting, which I think is being talked about next door this session. other public health related projects at HL7 include electronic quality measure specifications release 1. That's being balloted right now, in fact. There's an implementation guide for CDA release 2 for level 3 healthcare associated infection reports. That's in its fourth release, I believe. Structured document architecture is another one of interest to public health. And then there's the HL7 individual case safety report release 3 that is being done by patient safety. Other public health related HL7 projects, well, in fact, any HL7 standards project in some fashion is going to be relevant to public health. There are hundreds of active standards projects at HL7, and many of these would benefit from a public health perspective. One, getting into a little bit more detail about the ELR implementation guide that I'm involved with Rita. It's in a draft for comment ballot right now, or actually, no, not right now. We did a draft for comment ballot in May 2009. It's actually, we've modified the initial implementation guide based on those comments, and that guide was further modified based on a harmonization strategy, which was discussed both with the HL7 FHIR work group and the National ELR group, and ended up revising the implementation guide based upon that strategy. And that document is now going through an HL7 informative ballot that I think runs for a couple more weeks. So the ELR harmonization strategy that I mentioned, it's intended to harmonize similar implementation guides, and the group that the strategy focuses on are the ELR implementation guide, the HITSP lab to EHR implementation guide, and the NHSN micro lab implementation guide that we're going to be looking to ballot in the spring. The goal is to provide rules for constructing a sender profile that meets the needs of multiple receivers. essentially each one of these, ELR, HITSPE, and NHSN, have different receivers, but they're all, it's all data coming out of the same laboratory. In fact, it's all supposed to be reporting the same information and everything. There's, but they have, the harmonization strategy is to allow a sender to do it once and send to all these receivers. Unfortunately, it involves that horrible word that, that Kurt says they're getting rid of in FLIP, which is optionality. So there's a low-level conflict between the FLIP approach and what this strategy talks about, and I've been working with the FLIP group to try to come some sort of agreement on whether or not they can fit into this strategy or not, or how they would fit in. Harmonization occurs at multiple aspects of a profile, including messages, obviously, the segments in the messages, data types, vocabulary, field and component links, element usage, element cardinality. There's a lot of moving pieces in the strategy. I have identified a golden rule for the strategy for receivers, is ignore what you weren't expecting to receive. Don't beat up on them if they send you data you weren't expecting. Just ignore it. Yes, and Ted's right. That's actually written into the standard. It's one of the basic underlying rules that a lot of people forget. If you weren't expecting it, ignore it. The strategy is actually being balloted along with the ELR implementation guide. It's an appendix in the guide, and so comments are welcome. The strategy actually implies the changes will be needed to be made to the HITSPE lab to EHR IG. We'll see how that goes in the future. Okay, finally, how to get involved at HL7. The most obvious answer to getting involved is to become an HL7 member. You can join a work group without being a member, but that doesn't hurt. You can join an HL7 project if it's one that directly applies to work you're doing. You can subscribe to HL7 list servers and monitor emails and be a lurker on those. You can attend HL7 working group meetings twice a year. They're held in the U.S. Once a year, they're held at some exotic location like Kyoto, Japan, and the spring this year. And next year, it's going to be in Rio, Brazil. In the past, it's been in the Netherlands. It's been in Germany. About once a year, they're trying to get outside the U.S. You can also attend HL7 Educational Summits, and there are a couple of useful links. They're at www.hl7.org. They've reorganized their website, so if you're familiar with it previously, you might have trouble finding things. HL7 also has a wiki. So why do you want to get involved? HL7 standards don't often take public health needs into account. HL7 is an international standard, so it's a place you can get the international perspective on your work. HL7 is one of the best places to get consensus on best practices for data exchange, and there are great people there and wonderful professional contacts and resources. And you all are needed. And now I can take questions, and actually Rita helped me put this together. I want to thank her for her help.
The working group meeting in 2 or 3 weeks is here in Atlanta. So
yes.
if you're based here and you have students who'd like to go, Christy can facilitate it. Now, Ted.
It's a project just starting up that I've been encouraging them to talk to FAIR, that may be of general interest here. There's a project just starting up at HL7 that folks here may have particular interest in. It's going to be sponsored by Anatomic Pathology Work Group, and it's on cancer registry reporting. Mm-hmm. And I've been encouraging them to make it a co-sponsored with FAIR, but they probably have not spoken to you, otherwise it would have been on your slides. So I have to bug them again.
Right, they haven't. We were involved with them at the very beginning when they started talking about this, and then they kind of went off. They were down in that corner for a while. And now that they're back, thank you for letting me know. I'll make sure that
I
talk to them.
I'm going to hunt them down.
Yes. Thanks, Ted. Other questions? Right there.
Tutorials.
Tutorials.
Yeah. The HL7.
Working group involved.
Yeah. Yeah, there HL7 is introducing the electronic tutorials. I haven't actually checked into it myself, the details, but that's one way. The education summits are held around the country 3 times a year, are another mechanism that focuses on education. And then, of course, all the working group meetings themselves, there's a whole tutorial track throughout the week where you can focus on just learning things about the standard.
So is that something that requires a heavy, regular involvement in the working group meeting?
No. You can show up just for those things. Ideally, of course, the next time around you come back to participate in the working groups after you've learned how to interpret the standard and everything. Back there.
Services aware.
Right now, I believe there's a
CTS2,
which is Common Terminology Services, and I know Structured Documents is looking at one of their implementation guide projects to be one of the alpha projects, and that one with the acronym that I was rattling off and couldn't tell you what it was about, I think is in trying to be one also. And there are a couple others, and I'm not sure what they are. Like I said, they're trying to get them nailed down.
The little bit I know about that project is about the little bit I know about that long acronym project is that it is the person within the electronic health record group that has a service functional model established to structure it according to the standard SOA architecture stuff and the same
And I also know that Orders and Observations is considering an alpha project to exercise the behavioral model aspects of SAFE, which has to do with details of dynamic data exchanges. But OO is a little resource-strapped and may not have anybody to throw at that project. Yes?
Paul LeMage, Enterprise Architect.
Mm-hmm.
Public health, because many of the applications that I see, are trying to reinvent all of these wheels many times.
Right.
My second point is around the HL7. My observation is that there's so many versions.
Mm-hmm.
Your view of standardizing on these versions itself, so that itself is a challenge from an enterprise.
Oh yeah. Well, that. Oh, okay, yeah. The question is, HL7 has so many different versions of standards. We have HL7 2.x. We have the whole series 2.1 through soon to be 2.7. Now then, there's version 3, and there are multiple releases within HL7 version 3. So there's a proliferation of versions of standards, and HL7 can't quite seem to lock down on one. Part of the problem is that as soon as somebody implements a standard, they don't want to change anymore. But somebody else has something new or new business requirements that they want to see a standard for. So the standard has to continue marching forward. It takes effort like what we're seeing today in HITSB to try and move organizations from older implementations such as 2.1, 2.2, 2.3 to newer versions such as 2.5, 2.6, or even to CDA. And so we're starting to see that happen here in the U.S. But for instance, if you look across the border up north, they're taking the approach where they're going to dictate use of HL7 version 3 at the national level. And they're casting aside older 2.x, for instance. So some of what you're looking for requires the political will to do that. I don't think HL7 can dictate that, quite frankly.